Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner on that Sock'em MCs run DMC. On this day in 2002, J Master J from Run DMC was murdered by an assassin single bullet at his recording studio in Queen. So we remember him on this day in history and his music and his work. We're now joined by Whitney Dow, co-founder of Two Tone Productions and director and producer of The Whiteness Project, and Marco Williams, co-founder of Two Tone Productions and an associate arts professor at Canbar Institute of Film and Television at the Tisch School of the Arts at New York University. Good to have the two of you with us. Welcome, Whitney and Marco.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you both here, and it was good to meeting you on the Melissa Harris Perry Show. Whitney, I'm glad you could do this today.
Well, thank you. We're both excited to be here.
And we have in our studio with us Sarah Tooley, who is a member of the Baltimore Racial Justice Action since 2011. Sarah, good to see you again. Good to have you in studio.
Good morning, Mark.
And Adora Ayer joins us once again in studio, project manager of the More in the Middle campaign for Associated Black Charities and facilitator and analyst at Baltimore Racial Justice Action, a program of Fusion Partnerships. Good to have you back, Adora, always.
Thank you.
And y'all can join us here, 410-319-8888. You can log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner, write to us at talk@steinershow.org, or just call 410-319-8888. Maybe you've seen this on public television and want to join us, talk about it. We'll be playing some of the pieces that came out of this project so we can talk about them together for the next almost hour, 410-319-8888. But Whitney, let me start with you. I want to talk first about why you took this project on, and then I want to talk to both you and Marco about Two Tone Productions and what you take on. But let's start with why you took this project on and what it was.
Oh, I have to take the headphones off because I'm getting some reverb. Hold on.
That's cool, man. What have you got to do?
This project was really based in the 18 years of work I've been doing with Marco. As I think you know, we've done a lot of films on race. And over that period of time, I started to feel more and more that the things we were both working on had an oppositional construct. And what I mean by that is that we were looking at bad things that white people had done to black people, and particularly, you know, very identifiable racist things. And I started to feel more and more that it took people like me, you know, progressive white people, off the hook because I didn't see myself as a racist white person. And so I could look at these things as something outside myself that needed prescriptions, as opposed to looking towards myself and how I was part of the racial paradigm in the country.
And so you chose Buffalo.
I chose Buffalo for a couple of reasons. One, Marco and I had done a film there, and I think it was 2004 in the public school system about self-segregation. And I picked Buffalo for the Whiteness Project for the same reason that we picked it then, was that it's representational. Like, you know, as a filmmaker, almost everything you do is representational. And Buffalo is a good stand-in for a lot of cities in the North, whether it's Cleveland or Pittsburgh. And the other thing is that one of the reasons with Buffalo is that when people talk about race, a lot of times they think it's something that the South always grapples with, as opposed to the North. And it's important for, I think, people to realize that it's something that everyone in this country is grappling with.
And Marco, I'm curious, the two of you have been together for a long time doing this, and I just talk a bit about Two Tone Productions and about your work together and about what the two of you had been trying to accomplish over these 18 years with these films and for America to see.
You know, as Whitney has shared, we've made two films together, and yet the production company itself has done a couple other films, all kind of examining aspects of race in America, and principally pivoting on the black-white racial paradigm. And a lot of it has been, as Whitney has articulated, kind of, you know, an examination of some egregious actions by whites against blacks, but also looking at the ways in which whites and blacks might be able to come together. I shouldn't say come together, let me rephrase that. Whites and blacks may arrive at a better understanding of one another. I think that we set out to do this with me being a white man, myself being a black man. That made a lot of sense for us to have that kind of conversation in the production office, on location, and in our film work. But I believe that we always felt that we were making films that examined the question of difference, that allowed any sets of or groups of people to come together, hetero, homosexual, religious differences, et cetera.
And I'm curious, before we jump right into this and in this conversation and have and play the first clip we're going to play that I'll describe, what have the two of you learned from all this work?
How much time do you have?
5 years. No.
You know, I like, and you know, one thing that I think is that what we really learned, and I think, and I, you know, Mark can speak for himself, but we have a unique experience. I think very, very few people have had the benefit of having, and that is attacking things that we really care about, creative enterprises that in which we have shared control. And what I mean by that is that you mostly, when you do things, you either have no control or total control. And when Marco and I make films together, neither one of us has final veto power over anything. So we have to negotiate everything. And if you can imagine when you're taking on a film project and you're trying to represent your own voice in it, and yet you're trying to cut a sequence, and then you have to ask yourself, well, who has the first word in the sequence? Who sets the term of the debate? Who has the final say? How are things framed? And I think that for me, anyway, having to negotiate that and really examine what I'm trying to say and what are the forces that are shaping what I want to say, you know, when I'm dealing with racial issues, has just been an invaluable, you know, both life lesson an incredible sort of set of experiences that inform my work. And that's why when I say that, you know, this whiteness project, the DNA for this whiteness project comes directly out of Marco and my first film, Two Towns of Jasper.
And Marco, go ahead, Marco.
Yes, please. I'd like to just add, and really just amplify what Whitney has shared. You know, I think that we live in a nation, at least I'm of a generation, living in a nation where the opportunities to have candid conversation about difference do not happen regularly. They're often adversarial, contentious, accusatory, guilt-laden. Lots of things that may be justified, rational, but they don't necessarily yield conversation that moves things forward. And so as Whitney has shared, by virtue of having these creative projects at stake, that was our ultimate goal. But along the way, we had to negotiate, navigate, consider, learn from one another about race and find ways to talk about race in a very candid, open way. But that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not suggesting that everything is perfect, that we don't have disagreements, we don't see things differently, but at least we've enjoyed, that's probably an odd verb, at least we've had the opportunity to have an experience, as Whitney said, that I think few Americans get to have on a day-to-day basis.
So let me jump into this. I know that Mark, you didn't do this project with Whitney, but I want to have both your voice on here, and you know the project. So let's play our first clip. The first clip we chose was a young man, and the piece that you wrote afterwards, what 6% of white Americans think descendants of slaves should be paid reparations. But we can talk a bit about why you put that there after this clip. But let's hear this first comment in your documentary.
Do I think it's beneficial for me to be white? Have I gotten any privileges like that? I would say no. Just plain and simple no. I think that, you know, with civil rights and everything, I think a lot of times that other minorities sometimes get more benefits than I would as being a white person. For some reason, some black people kind of hold on to the back in the day, the slave thing, or they feel they're not being treated right. Should slavery be something that, because it happened, we owe black people something more? Absolutely not. Maybe their great-great-great-grandmother went through it, someone they never met, but it's in the past. There's been injustices done forever in human existence, and it's just something that shouldn't happen. But it doesn't mean I owe anyone anything because of it. I think it's hard to talk about race as a white person because I feel like maybe sometimes black people are just looking for a reason to tell you why you're wrong or tell you why you owe them something. If I was in a room full of white people, I would not feel uncomfortable talking about race.
All right. Well, let me go to in a second. We'll go to the next clip, and can we try to go to number two very quickly, and see if we can play them together. If it's, and we can comment on both at the same time. All right. Well, we're having a problem with computers. We'll have to get somebody here to straighten that out. I'm sorry, but let's jump into this. So you put on this. 6% of white Americans think descendants of slaves should not be paid reparations. But I think that, to me, I'm curious why you put that on there as that one, Whitney, because there's so much in this one particular piece, just about kind of fear and thinking about race. So why did you choose that particular line?
Well, first I want to say that although I didn't collaborate directly with Marco on this piece, that this piece couldn't exist without Marco and my collaboration. And I just want to say that up front. I think that you know, what Jason says here is something that I think all white people struggle with. And I think that this idea that we recognize the injustice of the past. There's no white person that you can talk to or ask about the structural and institutional racism of America, and just, you know, really how America was founded originally on white supremacy, that there were horrible injustices. And I think that we all struggle with, well, what obligation does that create in us? And I think, you know, Jason comes out with it. He has a particular view on it. But I think that a lot of people have responded to that clip and are sort of shocked by it. But I would defy any white person to say that they don't struggle with that question. And I just thought it was interesting to see that. And I also wanted to show, by putting that data point up, is that what Jason is saying is a widely held belief. It's not something that's outrageous. There's many, many, many people, many white people in this country feel that black people.
Are you still there? Finish that sentence again, Whitney. I'm sorry.
What I said, the reason why I put the data point there was that I wanted to, underscore the fact that what he's saying is mainstream thought. I think a lot of people look at these videos and they say, oh, a lot of this stuff is outrageous. It's crazy. And if you look at the data points, that's why I included the data points throughout the entire project. I wanted to underscore that maybe these aren't things that you hear in the media. Maybe they aren't heard in polite conversation or conversation of mixed race people. But a lot of the most discomforting things in these videos are things that I would argue all white people hold pieces of somewhere deep inside themselves.
Sarah Tooley, you comment on that before we turn to Adar.
Sure. So as a white American, working towards racial justice, one of the things that I find most important is these conversations of white folks with other white folks, because of the grossly misinformation and underinformed population of white folks that are trying to understand our history and how structural racism works today and not being able to put the pieces together. And so when you hear this gentleman's comments, it does represent so many of what white Americans are thinking, but it's not I'm not quite sure yet how this will be a tool to move that conversation forward without some educational, maybe like probing questions that can be asked along with it, or some of the history that can go with it, and kind of showing how various practices and policies within the U.S. have resulted in the huge wealth inequality that we have today that largely lies across racial lines. So I'd like to see this film be seen widely, but have an educational tool to be used with it, which I know POV has done for many of their documentary films before. And so I would hope that that's in the works of being developed.
Adar, go ahead.
I agree with Sarah. I think that the conversation isn't so much about quote-unquote race as it is about our history and legacy of racism, white supremacy. It is about institutional and structural racism. So when we have conversations in which people talk about race, they voice their opinion, they voice their experience, and we all have that. But to do that without a context, a real context, a historical context, does not move the conversation forward. It leaves us all with our various opinions and nothing more.
And I think part of the problem here, and let me just jump in with this question, and Marco.
I disagree so much, but go ahead.
No, Whitney, well, go ahead and disagree first before I say anything else.
Yeah, this is what I think. This is what I believe, is that I think that when you say uninformed, that really feels pejorative. I think that you have to look at the people's experience and how they're living it in their experience, and say that they're uninformed. You know, when you talk to somebody who's living in a depressed town like Buffalo or a depressed town like Detroit and has these experiences, what the problem is that they don't, you know, everybody wants to make their own personal experience sort of defining what the context in which they live in, which is wrong. But what I disagree is that what I really have found by this piece, one of the most interesting things that I've learned, is that I come from a place like you talk about, of facilitated discussions with context and someone explaining to me. And what's happened with this piece, which I think is really exciting, this piece has been shared over Facebook somewhere between 30 and 40,000 times at this point. So what that means is that this piece is going into people's private social networks and personal networks where they feel comfortable, and they're mediating themselves. They're having themselves. When I have gotten in on some of those, I managed to track down some of those Facebook discussions. There are discussions that are 150 things long. There's not somebody at the front of the room telling someone what to think. There are people trying to hash it out for themselves. And I think that white people don't participate in conversations that are facilitated because they don't know how to have those conversations. When someone's up in the room lecturing them, it's very, very hard for them to hear it.
People are uninformed about the historical context of this country. People know enslavement, and that's it. That's what people talk about, like the man talked about in Eclipse. People do not know the institutional, the policy behind wealth inequality. People cannot see the privileges of whiteness and the way that those privileges have been codified into law, policy, custom, culture. They don't see that. And because they don't see that, conversations are important, but conversations where people can hear that information, exchange that information, and then, as you said, Whitney, grapple with it themselves. None of the work that we do is lecturing people and telling people what to think. It is providing information and education and a context which is lacking because we do not have that taught in our schools, and that is not the national narrative or frame of our country when we have any conversation like this.
Before you can get people to listen, you have to do one thing. I want to say that I really admire the work that you guys are doing. I spent a lot of time on your website and doing it. And I think that what you're doing is important. But what I'm saying is that the first step of what all I'm trying to do here, because I'm not an activist. I'm not an activist like you are. I'm a filmmaker, and I'm interested in certain ideas. And you know, the thing that sparked this project was an experience that I had with Marco when Marco and I were giving a talk at a place called Facing History and Ourselves, and a group of seventh graders were interviewing us. And they asked, and this little girl asked me, Whitney, what have you learned about your racial identity working with Marco? And I had this very odd experience where I had these two parallel thought processes where I wanted to say, I don't have a racial identity. I'm Whitney Dow. I've been working on these race things. I'm a righteous dude who's out here fighting for right. And at the same time, having this internal conversation where I was saying to myself, oh my God, I have the most powerful racial identity in America. I'm a white male. And up until that point, I hadn't really understood that. And that was the beginning of a process of me recognizing that my race is an active, dynamic component of my every day, of my every moment, that it impacts every moment of every day of my life. And that once I got that in my head, it was like getting x-ray glasses, and it fundamentally changed the way I interact with the world and interact with people, interact with institutions. That's what I feel is the first step. Before I can hear anything else and learn anything else, I have to recognize that my race is a dynamic component of my life and really impacts it. Otherwise, you're just telling me things that you're just giving me information. Does that make sense?
Whitney, so, we're not.
We have to take a little break here. And I really want to encourage folks to call us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on this. We're going to play another clip, a couple of clips here. And we're going to take this whole piece with Point of View and the piece that was done here by Whitney Dow in the next couple of weeks and make a much larger two-hour conversation with a lot of people in the studio and Whitney and others. And so please join us here, 410-319-8888. We're going out right now with Jamie by the great Eddie Holland of Holland, Dozier & Holland, born on this day in 1939.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On time.
It's tricky. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky. It's tricky. Tricky. Tricky.
It's tricky. Run DMC. Jam Master Jay of Run DMC was murdered on this day in 2002. So we remember him and his music during this day in history and during our breaks. We are here with Whitney Dow, co-founder of Two Tone Productions, director of this piece we're talking about now, The Whiteness Project, which we'll be linking to on our website, which is just a very powerful piece that makes these conversations happen. And we're looking forward to doing a much longer conversation about this with Whitney and others in the coming weeks. Marco Williams is with us, who's co-founder with Whitney of Two Tone Productions, done his own projects through that as well, associate arts professor at the Canbar Institute of Film and Television at the Tisch School of the Arts at NYU, New York University. Sarah Tooley's in the house, member of the Baltimore Racial Justice Action since 2011. Adara Ayira is with us, project manager of More in the Middle campaign for Associated Black Charities and facilitator and analyst at the Baltimore Racial Justice Action, a program of fusion partnerships. And y'all are with us at 410-319-8888. Let me do this. I do want to get to this other clip, unless you are burning here to jump in, Adara. I want to get to this other clip and get our callers online.
Just very quickly, I was going to say, Whitney, it's not that anybody is disagreeing with you. We're talking about level of conversation and moving a conversation forward. We hear your point about a starting line, and that's great. And so we're talking about not only the starting line, but also moving things forward and what is needed to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say that, you know, I agree with, you know, I read your 29 points for white people. I agree wholeheartedly with every single one of them. And, my issue is that when I start to talk to people about this, and you mentioned on their website, is there the guilt is really the thing that the guilt and confusion is what slows people down on this. And my message, I sort of joke, is white people, I come in peace. You know, for me, embracing this is not a negative thing. I don't have to accept white privilege in that sense. With me, recognizing this, understanding how the paradigm works has been incredibly enriching for my life and a wonderful experience. And that's where I feel like many times when I'm trying to figure out how to frame the conversation so that white people hear me, because so many times they don't hear, they hear these conversations, but they can't really hear these conversations. And, I just was texting Marco back and forth with implications saying, you know, just trying to get new recruits.
And Marco, let me get your thoughts on what you've been hearing in this conversation. Then we're going to go jump to this new clip and then go to the phones, and Aramie will be our first caller up.
I guess in some sense I hear what everybody is talking about. I'm just trying to think about, you know, the whiteness project inside the Caucasian/white box, and, you know, thinking about what that platform is and what its intentions are, and even thinking about why it perhaps engenders a lot of, you know, dynamic conversation and a lot of wrestling over sort of, you know, owning sort of the conversation. Look, I look at it and I listen to what people say. I think there's some ignorance. I think there's some naivete. I think that there is a lack of awareness, overt awareness of white privilege. But I also look at it and say, but here are a group of people who felt comfortable enough to talk relatively freely about their thoughts about whiteness. They were not at this starting point told how to think about it. It just gave us a framework. And so in that sense, I think it is the starting point. And I think that that's probably what filmmakers, that's probably what we do best, is that we, as to coin Whitney's phrase, film is a medium that communicates emotion far better than information. So we, that's what we do initially, and it's for others to think about how to take that emotion, how to channel it into places that allow people to move forward. And so I think that the important thing here is not to sort of either shoot the messenger or the message, but rather to sort of think about, well, let's celebrate that it's there, and what can we do with this information? What can we do with these attitudes? What can we do with what's being excavated?
Let me go to this next clip that we're going to play. I won't introduce it. Just listen to it. We'll come back and talk about it, and I'll read you the piece that goes under it when we come back.
If we're going to talk about black men in general, very beautiful people. So when you smile and you say hello, that's not an invitation to follow me, come to my door. You know, I have a convertible to pull up next to me. I don't, you know, I'm just being friendly. I'm a smile to a woman or a kid or a dog in the car, any person. They take that as a opening to approach. And as I said, as a voluptuous woman, I don't, I seem to, they seem to gravitate that way to me. And it's just not comfortable. So do I call it prejudice that I don't like that? I guess it is in a way. I don't like that. I'm afraid, you know, so.
And under the, and as soon as that, she finished her comment, it, the what came up, the graphic was more than 40% of white Americans say, quote unquote, many or quote unquote, almost all black men are violent. And that this was an interesting piece to me because it was just maybe about violence, but it was also about, I'll let Sarah Tooley, you haven't heard from you in a few minutes, jump in. It's also about the complexities of sexuality and race, of men and women, of black men and white women, of white men and black women, and that whole complex world also fueled this, what came out here, not just the notion of violence, although, but.
I mean, one of the things I think the Whiteness Project is a huge asset is that it's creating an important documentation of what white America is saying and bringing these statistics to life. So you can hear that statistic, but to just hear the everyday things that many white Americans are thinking and have it, I think this is the maybe first 1,000 people who've been interviewed, but it's going to move on to do more. And so to have that historical document, it will be important to look back on in 50 years, in 100 years, and see where we've moved forward. And so one of the things that I think, though, especially in this conversation about violence, is what's the point of the Whiteness Project? I mean, I see the point as a great desire to stop this cycle of deadly violence that is most affecting people of color in this country and people who have been in formerly colonized nations throughout the world, that the U.S. continues to perpetuate this history of chattel slavery. And so it's embarrassing to hear a white woman talking about violence and as it affects, as it relates to race in America in relationship to black men, when it clearly is not representing the statistics of the of what's accurately happening.
Whitney, you want to thought before we jump into the phones here?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that, that one of the things, and I think that, that why that's such a complicated and disturbing clip, is that at the same time, I would challenge any white person to say that at some point they weren't afraid of a black person, most likely unnecessarily, and that that is a complex feeling. And again, that's why that that data point is so scary, because it is it shows this is mainstream thought. This is not, she's not out there on the fringe. This is something that a lot of white people feel. And you're exactly right, this idea that, look, white people have nothing to fear from black people. I mean, that's, you know, you and I are way down the pike on that. That's just a reality. You know, look, how many of these school shooters are not young white males? And yet it's not like nobody's afraid of young white males the way they portray, you know, young black males. So, yeah, I think it is complicated. And again, as Marco is saying, I think my goal here is to try and create an accurate snapshot of white thought in America. And let us start the conversation that way. As far as educational materials, we've worked with Facing History and Ourselves for a long time in the school system. Absolutely, I'd like to be a part of it. But I'm also very, very wary of positioning myself as an activist because I don't have answers. I don't have any answers. When I take on a project like this, or when Mark and I take on a film, it's because we're interested in something. We're trying to understand it.
Right.
And what comes out of it is the byproduct of it, and that's what this is.
So, Dar, very quickly, because I do want to get – I promise you I'll get
very quickly, if this is to journal and to create a record of where we are in terms of racializations in America, then I think that it is a good thing that can stand with the other cultural touch points in the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th century that affirms what we're seeing right now. And that is as much progress as we think we've made. We really haven't, because a lot of the comments that come from the Whiteness Project, you can go back into any popular culture in the prior centuries and see and hear the same thing.
But the other part of this to me, for the way I like Whitney's work, and I actually have really probed both Whitney and Marco's work since I met Whitney, is that it opens the door for people to be able to say things that we wouldn't ordinarily talk about or put out there in the world.
And any open door
is all closeted.
Is any open door to begin discussion is great. It's just, where do we go from there?
410-319-8888. Aramie, you're on the air. Aramie, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
We can, Aramie, yes. But just turn your radio down so we can hear you better.
Okay. I'll turn you down. Okay. On these issues, I want to elaborate on two issues. The first one would be education, and the second one would be housing. You need those two in order to move forward. Now, when we talk about race, it's not like the actual white people have done something, but they close their eyes. The conspiracy is still going on, okay? It was installed by the institutions were installed just to stop some people from moving forward. Because, for example, if you go to the school system, you see these public schools have no computers. They don't have good teachers, or sometimes they do, but the schools are slummed up. So how people can move forward if they don't have the materials they need,
okay,
and the education they need to move forward and move up the ladder. So we're not upset all the time about what happened before. It's how can they make it better? Stop the institution. Speak up. If you see what is not right, speak up. If jobs are open, let everybody have the same opportunity. That's what I want to say. And to conclude, I would just say we need to move forward for a better society, you know, by stopping conspiracy and being loyal toward each other. That's all. Thank you.
Aramie, thanks so much for your thoughts. Let's get another thought in here before we go back to another clip in our conversation. And let's go to Meredith. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Hi, Mark.
Hi Meredith.
I think that this is a good project. It is cathartic in some ways, but if this is about, you know, people just saying how they feel and then there's no point of education, then I have a lot of misgivings about it. Secondly, I think it's ironic that this woman expressed how scared she is when many of us, people of color, particularly people of African descent, are often frightened by the police. Like, just being stopped in your car could mean you could die. So talk about fright and the historic ramifications of that. And secondly, I think it's also a good project if there is education involved with it and paired with it, because African people of African descent and other people of color can't just be the ones working on ourselves. White folks have to do the work, too. It can't just be about us teaching you or things like that. That's inappropriate. We all have to work on ourselves, and if this is the first step for people working on themselves and deconstructing their privilege so that they can walk in the world as human beings, then I'm all for it. But if this is just about self-gratification, then I'm not. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't think this project is at all about self-gratification. I mean, I think this project is about opening doors for people to speak that we don't hear, that creates conversations that don't take place otherwise. It was one of the reasons I was so taken by it, but what they're trying to do here with this. But let me hear another clip. Let's just get another couple of clips in here because we're going to have a short amount of time here, unfortunately. So let's go to this clip. We're talking one. You know which one to play, so let's hit that one.
I think they see me as a white person, as a married person, and as a short, hairy person. Anyway, that's overweight. I've been involved in several lawsuits against police departments and municipalities for unlawfully arresting African-American male. I purposely try to defend people that are in those kind of situations. I'm not a racist or a bigot. And that I think it is very hurtful if someone assumes that of me just because I'm white or because I could be in favor of a policy that is, de facto racist. I'm pro-life, and I think it's rather upsetting when I see people addressing the issue of the bad things that happen to African Americans in society when in my mind there's nothing worse than in the context of race, 500,000 black children dying every year, and so it just seems like a giant contradiction to me.
So, initial thoughts.
Well, I'd like to say something.
Marco, this is Marco. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, this is Marco. I think you know, each of the people who speak, in some sense, speaks unfettered, uncensored. We don't know the specific questions that are asked, but they are all talking from their own perspective and point of view. And what's fascinating to me is that they're all really just they're grappling with something that they probably really have not engaged or entertained prior to Whitney inviting them to participate. And I think therein is something important for all of us to reflect on, and that is not so much why haven't these particular people or white people in general navigate or engage race. Hell, as a black man, I think about that all the time, you know, do the work. But once they start to do it, where are they in their process? What are their needs to evolve? And I'm even thinking about the responses so far on the radio. It seems to me that nobody is necessarily hearing what is being said. There's a lot of reaction because it pushes buttons. So the evidence here that we all know exists is that race is a difficult and complex issue to manage and to navigate and especially to talk about. And more often than not, people don't talk to each other. They don't engage each other. They talk at each other. And I think that's important for us on this panel to think about, and I think for the audience to think about. And lastly, Mark, I don't know your show, but knowing Morgan State University, I would say that probably the vast majority of the listening audience is African American. So it's also very interesting to hear how black Americans are responding to hearing white people talk about these issues versus a program that might be, its demographics might be more white people and how they would respond back, which sort of says that we're just touching on certain things and we're not going to really fully excavate them in this 40, 50-minute conversation.
We are not. Dark, a quick thought, then we'll go back to the phones and hear another clip.
I agree with him. We do need a much longer forum. But I would also say this. You know, nothing that has been said is new. It's not new. Maybe it is new to a white audience who does not have to think about, talk about these things every day. But to people who are living in this country and living the experience of a Ferguson, of a being stopped all the time, of regardless of the educational degree, still not making as much as a white person of comparable experience, this isn't new. You can look on the internet and see these types of comments every day. So I don't think that people are necessarily reacting
to it. But you don't hear these comments in this way.
No,
that,
Mark.
In terms of hearing the voices juxtaposed to the data points, creating conversation in a different way than hearing it in ways that go that are kind of aggressively racist. You do not hear the conversation the same way.
See,
who are they actually speaking to when they started this conversation? They were not speaking to you or I as African Americans. They were speaking to another white person. They were starting a conversation in a place where they felt a certain amount of safety to reflect on things. So in no way is Whitney suggesting that this is something new, that he's dug up and he's found something that nobody else has engaged, but he's actually put it in a context that allows people to react and to consider. And just as we on this panel are reacting and considering from our own perspectives, from places of our own awareness, our own education, our own work, so are broad audiences out there. And I think that's the important thing. I feel like our sort of arguing and positioning, you know, about whether or not this is doing enough or, you know, is it the starting point, how to push the needle forward, is missing the essence of this. And, in fact, I would say our dynamic nature of our conversation suggests that this whiteness project is affected. It is making an impact because it's engendering varying and dynamic conversation.
And I don't think it's arguing or positioning, Mark. I think that it really is talking. I think it's
Marco.
I'm talking to Mark Steiner, Marco. Oh. I know what your name is too. But what I do think is that, you know, if this is a project and it is just to let white people talk about where they are, let people listen to where they are, people who have not heard it, then great. As I said, we have heard in the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century, if this is part of the narrative, the national narrative and record that will show how far we have come or haven't come, great. If it is just a conversation starter, great. If it makes people feel more comfortable talking about their race and contextualizing themselves in race, great. My question is, where do we go from here that will change the culture, that will change the institutional and structural racism that impact people of color every day?
I got to say, maybe I'm naive, but I think that you have to change institutions, you have to change people's hearts. And I think that's, you know, institutions are made up of people. But I would say two things. One is that I didn't make this for you. I didn't make this for black people. I felt it was really that if I was interested in changing the racial dynamic of this country, I would have to attack my own community, engage my own community. So yes, you've heard it all before, but a lot of white people haven't heard it in a clear way and acknowledge it. The second thing that I would say to you is when you look at it, because I didn't make it for people who weren't white, but what some of the feedback I've gotten is that when you ask white people about whiteness, they talk about blackness. And you see it over and over in the clips. They come back and they talk about blackness, because I think that our sense of our own whiteness is so tangled up in our understanding of our relationship to blackness. And one of the things, I got this wonderful letter from a woman who wrote me and said, a black woman from Albuquerque, who was married to a white woman. She said, you know, watching this was painful. I had heard it. It was unpleasant, but it was very cathartic, because I always felt my blackness was defined by the whiteness of America, and to see white people were grappling with the same thing, that their whiteness was caught up in their understanding of blackness. And she felt that that really gave her an insight into the relationship that she didn't have before. So maybe there's something that comes out of it for people who aren't white.
We are just literally out of time. We have 30 seconds left, so I'm literally out of time on this one.
Well, I would just invite our listeners, if they do want to continue a conversation to deepen their own understanding of race, as well as just find people who they want to engage in that conversation with, they can go to the BeMoreAntiRacist.org website and join us in person on the 13th of every month for a discussion through the lens of racial justice.
Pardon me. Alan and Linda and the others who did not get through today, who called in, I deeply apologize. What we are going to do, and I'm going to ask Whitney Dow by email later today to come back and join us here, and if Marco wants as well. And we're going to set aside 2 hours, listen to almost most of the clips, really plot out a show to have this conversation and bring other people here in the studio, not all of whom are people who are going to be involved in the dialogue about race, but to broaden this. And I first of all, Whitney Dial, let me say thank you for the work that you and Mark Williams.
If I didn't say it, and I'd be really remiss if I didn't, is that I want to thank POV and PBS to do this. This was not an easy project to take on, and a lot of people turned away from it. And, you know, Mark and I have a long history with PBS and POV,
right.
And, you know, really it would be remiss if we didn't, acknowledge that they were part of this as well.
Well, I'm glad you did that. That's an important thing to do. I'm glad you did it. And Whitney Dow and Marco Williams, thank you both so much for the work you do. Look forward to having you back on very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Great talking to all.
You too. And Sarah Tooley and Adar Ayera, great. Thank you so much for coming in the studio. And Adar, at the last minute, I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to take a very brief break. We're going out with my girl, The Temptations. Otis Williams of The Temps, born on this day in 1939. Happy birthday, Otis Williams. We are going to come back with Mr. Never Done, running to be your next state's attorney of Baltimore City. Stay with us.